on the first Sunday of August, where we all of us tried to catch what's left from the summer. And if we were looking for vacation or a time with a family, we all concerned about how to catch our time before a busy season. And maybe this is a good thing to enter to this text, which in somehow is really not easy to understand. And this parable has been said and preached about for millions of times in different ways. And as I said that, I want to tell you how hard it is to share something is really preached very well from many people. But I'm going to share with you my struggle with the text a little bit. The context starts as the parable being told when Jesus was teaching a pretty big crowd, maybe many thousand people. Some in the crowd shouted out and asked Jesus to tell his brother to divide the inheritance with him. And here is my struggle. Jesus replied by refusing not to involve. And I'm trying to justify how Jesus could not answer a cry for justice. Jesus replied, refusing maybe to involve himself in a conflict in a family, in a brother dispute. But me also, he brought this not to be a personal matter, but to bring a bigger discussion, to turn the whole table around and say, this is not only a problem with one guy and his brother, but there is something we all can learn as a crowd. And I had a hard time, as I said, to deal with Jesus' answer to this poor young brother. And I have my own bias for that. I spent half of my time in ministry in Egypt, dealing with family fights, and many of these deadly, sometimes physically and literally deadly fight, because of many things related to inheritance. I know brothers and sisters killed each other because of the inheritance. I know family that's no more, they are not talking anymore to each other because of the inheritance. And according to the Jewish law, the firstborn inherit double what other brothers get. This is not fair. I know God said that. But why this one brother takes double and the other takes half? Yeah, God said, and we have to apply that. But if I'm in the place of the young brother, I will not feel good. And in Egypt, in our day, according to the Muslim law, women inherit half of what men inherit. And I fought with many Christians about this is not the right thing according to our religion because we are not Muslim. So why when it comes to money, you do not mind to borrow other people's tradition and religion to excuse your unfair behavior? And people ask us as clergy people to come and act, not really as a judge, because I assume judge is looking for justice. Not really as somebody's trying to stand in the middle. But you know, clergy people in my culture, regardless if you are Muslim, Christian, Jewish, you are so powerful. Whatever come out of your mouth, people will hear it, obey it, and understand this is the right thing. And especially with our poor, persecuted woman in my culture, this will be the only way of the priest or the pastor said that, so I have to follow that. So they actually used us to make an influence to take their side and not really to be right. So I'm hoping walking through this parable is to find some excuse and understanding for why Jesus dismissed this personal cry for justice. The man in this parable, the farmer, is rich, is introduced very clear. The message is very clear. Nothing to worry about. Is a man of wealth and greed. And we know the story about building more barns and avoiding using empty barns that owned by other farmers. His income this year was above his expectation. He was really not bland for that. And this reminds me also about people, how farmers, rich farmers react in my culture too. It reminds me only very, very rich farmer can store that much to wait for a price to increase or raise so they can sell it. Because when I remember 99% of my own village people, regular, I call them regular farmers, They stored corn and wheat for food. The only they have so they can make bread during the whole year. That's the only fortune they are hoping for. And they hope for their own stored corn and wheat to cover them during the whole year. And even I remember, I'm not speaking hypothetically, I'm really speaking from my personal life witness. Even when some neighbors could not have enough to complete their making bread for the end of the year, they will go to other neighbor asking to borrow some wheat and corn until the harvest come, and they give them from the new harvest. In my own village, people shared their fortune because they know that's the only way they can be secure. And they know also they cannot be blind because you are trapped by the eye-to-eye relationship with everybody know everybody. And I remember even when my neighbors and relatives used the roof of our house to store corn and wheat. And they gave us a lot of corn and wheat. So some years we didn't need to buy any corn and wheat to make a bread for the whole year. But going back to why this harsh title for this parable about why he is a fool. And Luke used a very specific word in Greek, which not only meant literally the fool we understand in English, but it could mean the unwise choice, or the other word really not being in touch. The rich is fool because he lives in his own bubble, his own circle. He's secure as much as nobody's entering and nobody's getting out. I am closed, I am in my own security zone. He has no one to talk and to share his situation with. And above all, he's fooled because he doesn't know he has a problem. And even if he moved to the good side of having a problem, it's not really a big problem. That could be a good thing to happen in our life. But also, he is the one who will have a fix to every problem. He thought he fixed his problem in 1 second. He stores his wealth in barns and believes this is all he needs. But look what he lacks. He lacks family, people around him to help him, farmers who work day to day to earn their bread. He lost the support of the community. He's not only portrayed in a bad image, negative image, because he doesn't share, but because he makes his own decision as he's the center of the universe. His wealth has isolated him to the point where he has no one else. It is likely this would have been understood by Jesus' listeners. But I also wondered about, Jesus, you are preaching to the wrong crowd. You are preaching about wealth. Who's listening there? They are the farmer who couldn't go and work. They are the farmer who are worried about, I am going to get enough food for the year or not. They are all dreaming about, I hope one day I will be like this guy, concerned about how much I can store. But this is not an option in their life. They are worried about everything except worrying about being really have abundance of fortunes and goods in their life. But I think Jesus was trying to say, maybe you have another way of being greedy too, not only through materials, but even being jealous about others. And one of my favorite professors at Luther Seminary, Arlen Hallgren, a new professor, New Testament professor, said these things. Provides an example of what one ought not to be like. The person whose identity is tied up with his or her positions, status, and or achievements is driven by acquiring them, can so easily end up unaware of the call of God and the need of the neighbor. And going back to the brother question, and why Jesus answered this way. Jesus answered to the young brother, if your brother is in the same place like the rich farmer, you should not be jealous. You should really worry about himself. And you should be worried about being jealous of him. Because his fortune made him the real poor and the real fool, according to my kingdom, the kingdom of God. And if this is the kind of judge you are coming to ask, this is my answer to you. Jesus did not address this problem directly, but he used the question to address the crowd with an issue that mattered to almost everybody. One important thing to learn from the way Jesus answered is not to be distracted by personal issue if we have a vision. If we know what we are doing, it's an easy thing to be distracted with other personal matter. By personal issue that you could meet and could be met by other people. Because what can Jesus offer is limited by his time on earth, and also because his mission is to be a reconciler and not to judge, and to be a healer and not divider. So if you are coming to me to add more oil in the fire, I am not your guy. Because I don't know how much conflict between you and your brother. But I know one thing. You know yourself, and I'm worried about yourself. What's really the motive that makes you shout and cry loud and try to make your voice heard among all these people? There is something burning in your heart. But there is nothing wrong with that. But is this really the most important for you now? Jesus' answer through this parable is difficult for somebody who is dying for an answer or support. I need an answer now. I didn't need you to take me from a small circle to a big circle, from a complicated situation to a more complicated situation. And this is the kind of answer Jesus provides by taking this small personal issue to a bigger, more complicated text with the parable. Jesus took the broader question and extended by deeper question that invited everybody to think. You cannot control anybody on earth. You cannot know anything about anybody on earth except you. So instead of projecting your problem and your brother on the rich or whatever, you are the only one, the master of your fate, the one who really can know what's going on in your heart. But I can relate to this poor man who's dying for and demanding for one answer right now and just clear, give it to me. I can relate to this brother's frustration from getting his answer soon and clear. Since I started my call at PBC, the presbytery assigned me as a new interim, try to learn things through, with an expert interim pastor to coach me. And every time I meet with him and really dying for an answer and asking him, I find he make myself, my life more harder by asking me more questions. Here's I am. In my mind, I'm saying, I am here, I want to give you, you are the expert, you know everything. Tell me, I want to fix things. And later, every time, his questions are like turning the table upside down and help me to see things different and help me to think about myself. This question may be not only about others, but maybe has something to do with me. Maybe there is something I can learn, and I can know where this anxiety and this concern is coming from. And this is remind me of God is really inviting us not to make our life more complicated, but to say, survive through the struggle, bring your questions, be honest, and I will be with you. As we learn from this story, if there is one thing I want to leave with you, do not be afraid from struggle. Do not be afraid from really trying to wonder with questions. But be afraid if you are the one who is taking your questions and answering to yourself. And if you have an easy answer, you should be concerned too. Because life is very complicated. Life not ends, begins and starts around us. It evolves around the whole humanity. And even evolves around the whole creatures. Long for the giver and not for the gift. Do not invest just in yourself and stuff. invest in people. And I will say with no concern, but be careful, I will invest in myself and in yourself if I can face myself with hard questions. When I see problems brings me closer to God and not brings me closer to selfishness and self-centered. We have a great opportunity to examine our call, our desire, our feelings, our thoughts, our decisions, if we really bring our questions into the Lord. This message is about the blessing and the fortune could isolate us from humanity and from God. But at the same time, our fortune, gifts, skills, wonderful things, jobs, money, everything we have could be used as a bridge to connect us with others, to keep our eyes on the giver and the redeemer of our life, and to make our investment that lasts for eternity. Amen.